So we start in Perakei Daled Mishnah Tes.
The Perak has been talking about Onah, which we said is exploitation or egregious overcharging or underpaying for goods. We mentioned that it is sixth. So that applies to general goods. This Mishnah here is going to say certain things are exempt because of the Psukim from Onah. I mean, if you would charge excessively for them or underpay excessively for them, that wouldn't be a prohibition of Onah because of the pasuk excludes them. So it says, El Devarim She'enlem Onah. These are the things that there is no Onah, there is no technical prohibition of you know, over undercharging. Avadim, purchasing slaves, there'll be non-Jewish slaves on the open slave market. Vashtaros, contracts. Vakarkaos, land, that's property. Vegdeshos, that's property from Hekdesh. So we'll do one at a time each thing. The first thing we'll talk about is, let's talk about karka first. Just, I'm going out of order for a reason. So karka, the pasuk says, v'chitim kru memcha lamisecha, when you sell some goods to your fellow Jew, okonom yada misecha, or you buy them from the hand of your fellow Jew. Now the word from your hand is superfluous. Miyad, we need the word miyad. Let us say you bought it from your fellow Jew. So, al tonu ish es achiv, a man should not afflict, extort, exploit, overcharge, defraud, however the translation of Onah you want it to be, his brother. So that's the iser of Onah, of over-undercharging. But since it said miyad, from his hand, the drasha is only things that could be come to hand, as opposed to land, which sits on the ground, no one sells it, you can't buy it from his hand. And therefore, the pasuk is excluding karka, land, from Onah. And therefore, there's no such thing as over-undercharging for land that would be in violation of the Torah's iser. That's the pasuk. We can rationalize the pasuk pretty straightforwardly, as much as it's very hard to land. Everything depends on who you are and where you are and who your neighbor is and everything else. So it sort of makes sense. There's no objective, unlike normal goods, you know, when you're buying, you know, apples. So an apple's an apple's an apple. But no two pieces of land are the same. So how could you ever put a price tag on it? It depends on what's there. And that's a rationale to the Torah's exemption. But anyways, without there, I understand you could just, you know, appraisals. You get appraisals. But the point is, the Torah's exempting it, and I'm giving you a rationale why. Avadim, the second thing we said is that slaves are exempt. If you sell a slave and the going price for, you know, a male, you know, 26-year-old slave weighs, you know, 5'9", 132 pounds, is whatever it is. Skinny. Doesn't matter, it's a skinny slave. Notwithstanding that, there's no Onah. The reason why is because slaves, avadim, are always hukash, always connected, like, you know, exegetically from the psukim to karka, right? Because it says v'isnachaltem osam levneichem achreim l'resh sechuza. The slaves are inherited as a resh sechuza, is like a part of the estate. So like that tells you the same way that the land is like an permanent estate, so is the avadim. So avadim are exempt. Then shtaros means contracts. The Mishnah's concept is IOUs. You know, if I have a debt that you owe me and I can't collect it, I might give it to, like, you know, debt collection agency or a person acting in that capacity. And let's say, for example, I sell it to him for 50 cents on the dollar. So when he collects it, so he's just made double his money. So really, you see, he way underpaid. He paid 50 cents and it's from a dollar. So that's Onah normally. But no, the contracts aren't subject to Onah. The reason why is because it says, kitimkru memchar, when you sell, like, goods, a memkar, a thing that has value to it. But there's no, when you're selling contracts, you're actually not selling the piece of paper. It has no intrinsic value. It's just it's a right to collect some future cash flow. So the pasuk of, it's not a good, a memkar. I'm translating the word good. A memkar, so it's exempt from the pasuk. It certainly stands to reason, in my mind, it's a no-brainer. That would extend to not just debt, but also equity, meaning like you have your stock contract, you know, your 500 shares in ExxonMobil. That would be the same thing. If you would greatly overcharge that stock certificate, that would not be Onah because of the pasuk. I presume that, and certainly would also exclude like derivative contracts, which are even more abstract. That's for sure not a real memkar. Okay, so his contract's not. I'm inclined to say that for equity.
What's a derivative?
Derivative is like weird, like options, like weird financial gymnastics. You know, swaps, swaptions, options. So those are not for sure. Those are even less real, quote unquote, than debt, that's for sure.
Someone has someone owes someone money. The person who's owed the money sells the right to the money to someone else for 30 cents on the dollar.
Right.
Or 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
So the person now, who do they owe the money to? Do they really owe it to the person who bought the contract? And if they don't pay, how does that play out in Shemayim? I know it's a little bit of a question.
I guess it would depend on how the contract is structured in terms of like collectability, but usually debtor to debtor transferable. I'll give an example. You give a check. That's how checks are the same thing. A check is an IOU, right? In this country, for sure, checks just pass around. People endorse them and hand them out as cash, right? Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what we're talking about over here. So if a person didn't make, I'm not sure. I'll let Hashem
pick that. You have to wonder, how much money does the person really owe then? Because if they owed a certain amount before.
Oh, for sure, it owes the same amount, the nominal amount.
No, but they sold the debt for 30 cents on the dollar, so the new person's only hoping to collect 40 cents on the dollar.
Doesn't matter, he's obligated. No, but he's for sure obligated to pay what he took.
The whole thing?
Yeah, for sure. I bought $100 from you. You just can't get it out of me, so you have your friend Guido who happily, for $50, take that rights to come break my kneecaps and get the money because he can get blood out of a rock. So of course I owe him $100 now. The fact that you only got 50, that's not my fault and that's not Guido's fault.
How about when Guido's willing to make a deal for less money though, then
how does it affect me? I agree to pay $100. I'm on the hook for $100. That's
no,
true.
I got you. Who has the extra money then?
And Guido does, that's the point. So that for sure he does. He has the right to collect it. You just can't turn around and say, listen, Guido, you pay me $50, it's worth $100. I want my money back. That's the point of the mission. You can't say, that's Ona and you underpaid me. No. Okay. And finally, Hekdeshos. Hekdeshos would be if the base of Mikdash, someone has mocked something like my iPod, it gives the base of Mikdash as a gift, they'll sell it off. If someone wants to overpay for the iPod egregiously in the base of Mikdash, or can squeeze the base of Mikdash to underpay, either way, there's no Isra of Ona because it's the Pasuk says, Isha's Achiv, man to his brother, and base of Mikdash isn't your brother, so therefore it's exempt from the Pasuk. Okay, fine. Now, while we're listening to these four things, we're going to say other halachas that apply to this set of four items. Ein lehem lo tashlumi kefil. There's also no kefil, the double payment. In other words, if someone manages to steal your slave or steal your karka or your shtaros, your contract, or your hektish stuff, but from hektish, so then there's no, as a thief, when you pay back, you can't get to pay back double. But it doesn't. There's no double payment when it comes to these four things, and below tashlumi arba v'chamisha, nor is there a four times payment or a five times payment. That's if, let's say, someone stole Beis Hamikdash's sheep, and then either tavach or machar, he shechted it or he sold it on someone else. There's a special din that for a sheep you pay four times, and for a cow you pay five times. None of that applies to these lists of four things. The reason why it's also from Pesukim. This comes from what's called a klal prat klal structure, meaning the pasuk says, I'm talking about kefil now, but kefil, and Arba and Chamisha is connected to that. Kefil says, al kol dover pesha, on any criminal act, I'll call it. So that's the klal, any criminal act, that's anything, right? Then it says, the pasuk says, al shor, al chamor, al sev, al silma, whether it's on a cow, or a donkey, or a sheep, or a garment. So those are all pratim. Those are pratim. Those are individual items. They could have just said nothing. Al kol davar pesha. That'd be everything. Why is it in a list of particular items? And then it goes on to say al kol aveda ... So al kol aveda means on any lost object. It's the pasuk there starts talking about lost objects and ends up talking because in the Shomer Chinam ends up talking about paying double. Point is, so it says yishalem shnayim l'reihu. A person will pay double to his friend. So the structure was kol davar pesha. That's a klal. Then it says shor chamor se. Silma, that's pratim. And then it goes on to say, kol aveda, anything that's lost, klal again. So the rule is when you have a klal, prat, klal, the way that it's to be understood is, exactly. Whatever is included, all that's included in the klal, the general principle, is that which is common to the pratim, to the individual items. So now anything that is different, anything that doesn't have commonality to those pratim, will be excluded from the pasuk. So in this case, karka is excluded because karka is not metal and it's not an object to move, unlike the four things that are like little movable objects as opposed to land. So land is excluded. Avadim get excluded because avadim are connected to karka. Stars are excluded. Contracts are excluded because they don't have like intrinsic value like these things do. And hektish is excluded because the pasuk says shnayim l'reihu, pay twice to your reya, whatever your friend. Just echav was the pasuk before now by Ona. Here it's Re'ehu, but either way, hektish is neither your ach nor your reya, so therefore those four things are excluded from kefil or four or five payments. Okay, now like a new din, but regarding that set of four items, also the shomer chinam eino nishva. The shomer chinam, if he let's say was your custodian, you ask, please watch my stock certificates or whatever, you watch my contracts. and then, or my eved, whatever it is, and then you fail as a babysitter or a watchman, and it gets lost or stolen, whatever it is, he, the shomer, need not swear. Normally what happens is that the custodian, you ask him to watch your iPod for you, and then you come back and say where it is, and I say, oh, it's gone, someone, it's got lost, it got stolen. So then I would be exempt as a shomer chinam, but I need to take a shvus, a shomer, remember, lo shalach boyar, and I wasn't poshea, and what really happened was it's not in my rishus. So that's normally true, but again, it's a klal structure that will exempt these four things from a shomer chinam having to swear. And a nosa sachar, meaning like the paid custodian, also ainam mishalem, he doesn't pay. So meaning that if they're different things. For a shomer chinam, I'm exempt for anything besides pshia, besides negligence. So it's talking about swearing that it was, you know, lost or stolen or an onus. When it comes to a shomer sachar, a paid custodian, so then I'd be on the hook for theft or loss, but I'd be exempt from onus, circumstance beyond my control. So I say the reason why your iPod isn't here is because my house burned down. That wasn't my fault, and I got burned down with it. So normally I'd have to pay you. So sorry, what I said is true, but irrelevant. I'm sorry. The case of the mission is, it says Eino Mishalem, meaning if it would be lost or stolen as a Shomer Sachar, I should have to pay. You paid me to watch it, and I didn't watch it, and some thief got it, so it's my fault. Then I would normally have to pay, but here I'm exempt from paying. Also I'd be exempt. But here, the point is, unlike normal cases, these four things, the Shomer Sachar does not pay, because the Pesukim exclude these things. So that, yeah? For whatever technical reasons. I can't give you a good rationale why it should be, but that's what the Pesukim are excluding these four things from the Shomrim's protection. Now just two PSs on that point. Number one is the Mishnah didn't mention two other kinds of Shomrim, the Shoel, the borrower, and the Socha, the renter. But the Meforshim agree it's the same thing. These four categories of items are totally excluded from the parsha of custodianship, and therefore the shoel and the borrower and the renter.
You mentioned the donkey.
These four things: the slaves, the contracts, and the hektish. Those things, if it gets stolen or lost, the custodian is off the hook from doing anything. There, and that includes even the other two shomrim, the shoel and the socher. Mason, like we've just been through all this. That's why it seems like brand. Now. There is a question, an interesting question, which is, what about pshia? There's an interesting question like this. Now, the shomer chinam is, and everyone is obligated for pshia, for negligence. You say, watch my stock certificates, and I say, sure, no problem. And I put them on a park bench under a rock, and I walk away for a week, and I come back, and lo and behold, it's not there anymore. So that would be called pshia, and even the shomer chinam can't say, well, it was stolen. Yeah, it wasn't stolen, you gave it away. So pshia is exempt. Now, there's a question here, and what about a negligence, a poshea? Does he have to pay or not? For avodim and for stock certificates and hektish and so on. So the Rambam learns, interestingly, Rambam learns that he is still on the hook for it, because pshia, says the Rambam, isn't a violation of your obligations as a custodian. It's straight out nezek. It's like causing someone damage. I left your stock certificate on the bench. That's not being a bad showman, that's being a mazik.
I caused it to happen.
I caused it to happen. Like, again. So that's the Rambam's opinion. Therefore, he says, even though
normally
these things are exempt from custodianship obligations, not by Shia, is something different altogether. However, Tosos, the Rush, most poskim, says Tosos Yontov, do not agree. And they say, no, Shia is just one of the kinds of things that a showman is obligated for. Since the showman is not obligated for these four things, indeed, even if it was Poshea, I asked you to watch my slave. And you said, sure, no problem. And you said, you gave the kid, you know, the guy $5 to go take a fun joyride on the train, and lo and behold, he didn't come back. He's a slave after all. Then you can say, listen, what do you want from me? He didn't come back. And even though it's obviously Poshea, you'll be exempt. As a custodian, you'll be exempt. And that seems to be the din. So these four things, you got problems. You got to just lock them up in a safe. Otherwise, you have no recourse to your custodian, your showman.
You look at Shomrim, the one thing that's probably not addressed, I'm sure it's addressed somewhere, is people. What happens if a person is stolen? Someone's watching a kid.
Yeah, well, a person's not considered a picadon, not a deposit.
I mean, what happens in terms of...
What are you going to do? Are you going to execute them?
No, what happens in terms of payment? Like, do they value the person?
No. You don't need that for an evid, so for sure not. No.
Uh-huh.
No. No, I don't think so. I have no idea how it would work. I don't know. He's asking, what happens if you... What happens if you just give a person your child to a baby... Khalila. A person gives his child to a babysitter, paid or unpaid, who cares? The point is, the babysitter doesn't do their job, and the next thing you know, the child gets kidnapped. I don't know what the din is, frankly. I don't know what the din is. Okay, I don't know. But it's not this. That's all I know. It doesn't fall into this category. Fine. The Mishnah continues on. This is like a composite Mishnah. Now, Rabbi Shimon's going to argue on the whole thing. Rabbi Shimon says, on a small point, he says, when it comes to Hekdesh, actually, not all Hekdesh is the same. Remember, the exemption from Hekdesh, from all these things, is because the Pasuk had said, from your Echav, your brother, or Re'ehu, your friend. But Rav Shimon says some Hekdesh belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and if it gets lost, no, that's the loser's the Beis HaMikdash. But sometimes Hekdesh, if it gets lost, even though it's Hekdesh, it's sanctified property, but there's actually a victim, your Ach, your brother, or your Re'ah is actually a victim. What's that the case? I'm saying it outside first. That's where the person who consecrated or dedicated this Hekdesh is on the hook to replace it if something goes wrong. If you remember back from Maseches Megillah, you learned that there's sometimes a person can give a gift, commit a gift that's called a nedava, and sometimes a person can commit a gift to the Beis HaMikdash called a neder. A nedava is it's a voluntary gift. When I say, Hare Zu Ola, when I say this cow, this sheep is going to be an Ola. Okay? So now when I say this sheep is going to be an Ola, what happens is, this is the sheep. And if something bad would happen to the sheep, like it would become pusle. So I told the Beis HaMikdash, sorry, your sheep went bad. What do you want from me? I'm not replacing it. If I say this sheep, yes. I don't have to replace it. Because it's this sheep. It's not a personal commitment, it's not a personal liability. I'm dedicating this animal. So since that would be the case, Rav Shimon would say, if that would get stolen, for example, good. It's the Beis HaMikdash losing, not me. That's fine. But there's another kind of way to give a gift, a commitment to the Beis HaMikdash called the Nedava, which is like a personal obligation. So instead of saying Haray Zu, behold, this sheep is a Beis HaMikdash gift, I say Haray Alai. I accept upon myself to bring a sheep as an Ola to the Beis HaMikdash. So now, even if then I say, and it's going to be this sheep over here, and this sheep becomes consecrated. So now it's Hekdesh. But the truth is, if you would then be Gonavitz, we said they're Pater from Kevel. But here, if you, because the Beis HaMikdash is, because I've consecrated it, there's no Hekdesh. But if the truth is, if you, the thief, go steal my sheep, I have to reach my pocket and buy a new sheep, because I said, Haray Alai. It's a neder. It's a personal commitment to bring an animal. So Rav Shimon says, in such a case, really, you're causing the Re'ehu a loss. You're causing your friend a loss, your Echav, your brother a loss. And therefore, things, when Hekdesh has, like, recourse back to the person, because it's just a nedava, so then, it will fall into the category. It will not be exempt from these things we just said. That's what he says inside. Rav Shimon, if it's a neder, did I say it wrong? I'm sorry. A nedava is when I say, Haray Zu, this thing, and then there's no recourse to me. If a neder is Haray Alai, I personally commit. So therefore, if for some reason I can't deliver on my promise, even for circumstances beyond my control, I have to replace it. It's too bad for me. The sheep had a heart attack. Too bad. Cough up a new sheep, because you said you're going to bring a sheep, and you have to do what you said. Okay, so the Rav Shimon says, Kadshim Shu Chayev Bachrayusan, any Hekdesh thing where there's a personal obligation, recourse back to the person who committed it, since he's on the hook personally, Yeshlin Ona. There would be Ona if you would, you know, if you would sell that thing and it would go, you know, over underpriced, or he would agree sending with a Kefal and Arba and Chamisha, all these things apply. He says Ona, but it means all the things in the Mishnah. V'she'enu chayav b'achrayusin, and the kinds of Hekdesh which has no personal recourse to me if it doesn't get where it has to go to. So then, he agrees, Ein lem Ona, he agrees with no Ona, and also no Kefal, and no problem with the Shomer, etc. Okay. New paragraph. We're going back in the discussion we've had. We said there are four things, the Mishnah said, the Tanakhama said, that are exempt from Ona. Everything else is included. Now Rabbi Huda is going to say, oh, there are actually three more things on the list of exemption, that there's no din of Ona, you cannot over undercharge for them in a way that you'd be over the Torah. So he says, Rabbi Huda Omer, Afa Mocher Sefer Torah. If a person sells a Sefer Torah way above or below market value, there's no Ona issue. Why? Because he says a Sefer Torah is priceless. So what's it mean, above or below the value? There's no value to Sefer Torah. So you know, it's worth it. If you charge $1 million, well, it's worth $1 million. So what do you want? Right? So that's his sheet, huh? What? Yeah. So it's priceless. There's no such thing. Multiplying by zero. It's divided by zero. Now, Behema, he also says the animals, Umargalis, and also like...
Pearls?
Exactly. Margalis, a pearl. I presume it means any jewel. And the Ona. They have no Ona there. So why would...
Behema? So market value.
So I'll explain. This is Rabbi Huda's vision. I'll talk about the pearls first. When a there's a going price for pearls, right? And every, some pearls are 3 millimeters, some are 4, some are 5. They're like off-white, yes, white, cream, you know, Tahiti, fresh water. Right? The problem is, if your wife has, you know, an earring with two matching pearls in it, or matching pearl earrings, and she loses one of them, then not any pearl will do. She needs that exact matching pearl. She's going to look everywhere for it. So even though, like, on the Rappaport, you know, price list, there's, like, pearls go for X price for this size, you know, 3 millimeter pearl, that's which one she needs. But to her, it's worth, to find the matching, perfect match is worth much more than the going price. It's not all, not all the same. She needs that one in a million pearl, it's the exact fit. So Rabbi Yehuda says, in such a case, since you're looking desperate for that exact fit, for you, the purchaser, it's worth much more. Therefore, it's no onah. That's his approach to the whole thing. And his same logic applies to animals. This is more, you have to get in the mindset of how it was, you know, 2,000 years ago, that when you have animals work your field, they work in teams often, and when you're going to yoke two animals together, so it's important that the two animals be a pair. And it was, it, yeah, so if one is stronger than the other, basically either that is going to overwork and exhaust your weaker animal, or you're going to, you're not going to be able to, or it'll be like the weakest link in the chain, and therefore you'll underutilize your resource. So people, it's not a good idea. So people want animals that are paired up, matching in terms of strength and size and whatever, so that they can work optimally. So it's the same idea as a pearl. He's looking for like the matching part of the set. And therefore, to him, oh, this is just the animal I wanted. It's like, you know, the 1,000 animal I needed. For me, it's worth twice the going price, such as any, you know, it's not worth it. That's Rabbi's approach. The rabbis disagree. They say, by that logic, everything is that way, because every purchaser, he picked it, I mean, like, when he's buying something, it's because that's just the one he wanted, or he wouldn't have bought it, so you can't, he said, they say, no, no, no. Amru lo, the rabbi said, lo amru ela es elu, the only things that have an exemption of onah, these four things, and nothing more. And that's that. There's a list, and that's that. Yep, very good.